Good morning. This is Dave Mazza. The horrors of war don't stop when the guns fall silent. Landmines and other deadly hazards keep on taking a toll decades after hostilities end. One of the lesser-known hazards is depleted uranium, or DU, a residue of war that's taking lives around the globe. This morning we're going to be talking about DU with Lorraine Murray, an international expert on the subject. Good morning, Lorraine.
Oh, good morning, Dave. Thank you very much for having me on your program.
Well, thank you for joining us and bringing us up to date on this very serious topic. Let's start off with some real fundamentals, though, for our listeners. What exactly is depleted uranium?
Depleted uranium is a weapon of mass destruction, and it meets the definition of WMDs in two out of three categories under U.S. federal code. It also violates the Hague and Geneva Conventions and U.S. military law. It was proposed for development as a radioactive poison gas weapon under the Manhattan Project in World War II. And in the Groves memo, a declassified memo to General Leslie Groves in World War II in 1942. They knew it would permanently contaminate terrain, any of our own soldiers who entered contaminated areas, as well as the enemy, civilians, and that it would contaminate the food, water, and even the blood of exposed populations. So they knew very well how deadly it was in World War II, but they saved it for the 1991 Gulf War when it was basically taken off the shelf and used on the battlefield.
And how was it used on the battlefield? I mean, we're not talking about just a release of depleted uranium. Was it involved with some sort of armaments?
Well, in the Manhattan Project, they proposed to make dirty bombs, dirty missiles, and dirty bullets out of it, and that's exactly what they've done.
And so it was first introduced in the Gulf War?
Well, actually, it was tested all through the 70s and 80s and 90s. So all of the U.S. military bombing and gunnery ranges, not only in the U.S. but around the world, are contaminated with it. And we gave it to Israel in 1973 and supervised them using it in the Yom Kippur War. So all of the Golan Heights are contaminated from that war. And I live in the city of Berkeley, which is about a third Jewish population. And Jewish women have asked me why the women in their family are in an epidemic of breast cancer. And they said they lived on kibbutzes in Israel, and I said, well, that's probably the depleted uranium effects long term. And indeed, the target organs are the reproductive system. It causes large increases in infertility and reproductive cancers of the uterus, the ovaries, and the breasts. So it's a very, very, very pernicious poison. It's extremely deadly. And because of the very small particle size that form when uranium burns in these munitions, it becomes a component of atmospheric dust and goes around the world. And I can tell you, Dave, that the Los Angeles Drinking Water Company, Los Angeles Power and Water, has been measuring uranium in the drinking water since 1998. And last year, in 2007 alone, because of heavy bombing in Iraq and Afghanistan, the uranium levels doubled in Los Angeles drinking water. It's over here in 7 to 9 days or 2 weeks.
Well, that also be, and I want to talk more about, you know, the way this has proliferated as a problem beyond just the specific battlefields. But clearly, it's my understanding that, you know, the Gulf War was not just the only instance in which it was used. It's continued to be used by U.S. forces?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I just got a report from Major Doug Rocky, who was testifying at the United Nations in Geneva a few weeks ago, and he said not only are Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yugoslavia completely contaminated from the U.S. and NATO use of depleted uranium weapons, but he said the Congo, Sudan, and Somalia are all contaminated now, as well as Panama. They used it against Noriega when they captured him. And the island of Grenada was also contaminated during the Falklands War. So it's just everywhere. And I've worked a lot in Hawaii, the state of Hawaii. And Hawaii is just very, very, very badly contaminated with depleted uranium.
Was it also used in Kosovo?
Absolutely. Kosovo, Serbia, all of Yugoslavia is contaminated.
And the degree of contamination is in part, I gather, because it's not just, you know, we're not talking about just a bomb or bombs, but it's basically been incorporated into a whole array of armaments, from bullets on up to artillery shells, right?
Because yes, and also the United Nations, I'm sorry, the EU requested that governments around Yugoslavia do air monitoring for radiation during the 1998 attack on Yugoslavia by NATO forces, which included the U.S. And they reported for the first 3 days, when there was no ground action at all, it was just bombing campaigns and airstrikes, that they were measuring depleted uranium in other countries surrounding Yugoslavia on the ground. So all of the missiles that the U.S. used in Yugoslavia, Lord Robertson stated this. He was the head of NATO then. He stated it in the mainstream media. He said all missiles had depleted uranium warheads that the U.S. used, and some of them landed in other countries, for instance, Romania, and those missiles were taken to nuclear institutes, examined, and they indeed did have depleted uranium warheads.
So what other, I mean, you've mentioned Israel and, of course, the United States and a few others. How much is depleted uranium weapons in use in other parts of the world? Are the Russians, the Chinese?
Oh, sure.
So it's pretty much a kind of a standard piece of armament now?
Well, this is what Doug told me. He said something like 20 countries now have depleted uranium weaponry. We don't know if they're using them or not. We do know that Italian soldiers have become ill and contaminated firing ranges on Sardinia, which is an island off of the coast of Italy. And so NATO forces definitely have depleted uranium. Now, in the case of Israel has been given depleted uranium weaponry, particularly bunker buster bombs, by the United States, and up to 3 years before the 2006 attack by Israel on Lebanon, we had shipped 5,000 depleted uranium bunker busters to Israel. We gave them to them. And I warned in the news and posted it all over the internet during that attack in July because I knew they'd already transferred depleted uranium bombs to Israel. I warned that within 2 months after that attack, as soon as the rain started, 2 months after the rain started in Israel, there would be a huge increase in diabetes in Israel. And the rain started in October. They wash out these very fine, permanently suspended depleted uranium particles into the environment, in drinking water and food and even people's skin. And sure enough, in December of 2006, the first article came out in the Israel media newspaper that there was a huge increase in diabetes in northern Israel in children. And what we've seen around the world is a pattern of when the rainy season starts, the largest number of new cases of diabetes are diagnosed. And a new article from the Mail in England online is that a person is diagnosed in England every 3 minutes, a new case of diabetes is diagnosed. So just in this last year, diabetes has increased 50% in England, and that shows 150,000 new cases last year when it was 100,000 the year before. So this is occurring very rapidly, and after I went around the world and gathered government data from other countries, I realized that diabetes was very rare before 1945 when the nuclear age began with the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And there have been very, very large increases in diabetes globally with the introduction of nuclear power and now with the introduction of depleted uranium weapons. So
how is the depleted uranium triggering diabetes? I think most people, when they think of anything radioactive, they think of radiation sickness, and that doesn't necessarily, you know, bring diabetes to mind. What's happening there?
Well, depleted uranium, these nanoparticles have three effects. One is a chemical heavy metal effect. They have a radiation effect, and the deadliest effect of all, which is immediate, is the nanoparticle or particulate effect. And what we know from studies since World War II, since the Hiroshima and Nagasaki studies and Chernobyl and around nuclear power plants and now DU, is that uranium is an estrogen and a hormone disruptor. So the estrogen disruption affects the reproductive system, and insulin, which is produced in the pancreas, and is a carrier molecule or a carrier signal, it carries information to the cells, is a hormone. So it's uranium is directly affecting the production of insulin in the pancreas and also how insulin interacts with the cell wall to release the information into the cell. So it's an extremely pernicious poison. And it is even causing diabetes in animals, people's pets, dairy herds. I've collected a lot of very, very shocking information about the global and the long-term effects.
What sort of concentrations are necessary to trigger that effect? Because you've already mentioned that these increased rates of diabetes are occurring in areas quite distant from where depleted uranium was deployed.
Well, I wrote an article which people can Google or search for on the internet. It's called Populations Exposed to Environmental Uranium. And in that article, there are 40 citations so people can read more if they're interested, including the report published a year ago that I was quoting. And a young Navajo graduate student named Stephanie Huist did her research for her doctorate on uranium, depleted uranium, in drinking water below the EPA drinking water standards. So this is at levels that the U.S. government deems to be not harmful. Well, that's not true at all. It turns out very low levels, and chronic exposure have devastating effects.
So I take it then, you know, once this stuff's getting blown up into the atmosphere, especially with massive discharges like in Iraq, it's literally floating and coming down to rest all over the place.
That's right. It's absolutely correct. And even plants use hormones. They have hormones too. So it's contaminating and affecting the entire biosphere.
Other than the, you know, you've talked now about the diabetes and the hormone disruption, what other sorts of health issues are we seeing coming up that's attributable to depleted uranium?
Well, there's very serious DNA damage. Uranium has an affinity or a love affair with phosphate structures. And phosphate is in the DNA. It's in the mitochondria that produce the energy for the whole body. And in other parts of the body, for instance, metabolic steps in the cells. And so the uranium sticks to the phosphate. It damages the DNA, the chromosomes, all future generations. It if the sperm or the egg is contaminated or damaged, the DNA is damaged, in the new organism that forms from a sperm and an egg, every cell in the new organism has that damaged DNA, and then that's passed on to all future generations. On the mitochondria, it attaches to phosphate structures, and mitochondria have RNA and DNA that are affected, and so it causes chronic fatigue syndrome. This is all reported in our soldiers. Large increases in Lou Gehrig's, Hodgkin's, and what's the other disease? Lou Gehrig's, Hodgkin's, and I'll think of it, but also Alzheimer's, and probably autism. In our soldiers, when they come back, some of them are losing weight faster than if they were starving to death. And this turns out to be damage or interference with some of the phosphate steps in the metabolic process so that the body cannot metabolize food. And so what the body has to do is to convert its own protein or muscle mass in order to produce glucose for the person to stay alive. So it has many, many, many side effects, many diseases. It's a web of diseases that it's causing, but the two largest occurrence or highest rates of disease are neuromuscular damage and mental damage. We have over 200,000 soldiers who are mentally ill now out of a million who are medically disabled since 1991. And we've only deployed about 1.7 million to Iraq and Afghanistan. So it's a disease rate, it's a medical disability rate of over 55%.
Is the military acknowledging the link between those mental health rates and depleted uranium exposure?
No, they're lying about everything viciously. And they are attributing the mental illness to the stress of war and PTSD and explosives, but it's not from those. They're mentally ill 2 months after they get over there, and there are no battles going on. There are no battlefields now. It's a police action, basically. So it's just that the fact is that Iraq and Afghanistan are so contaminated now, the whole environment, that anybody who goes over there is contaminated in 2 months.
Is there civilian medical establishments that are acknowledging that we have a problem here and need to start looking at addressing it?
Well, they won't let international organizations into Iraq or Afghanistan, so all we know is what media people bring out or NGOs who manage to get into Iraq. However, I have been on tours with Iraqi medical doctors who were able to get out of Iraq, and I've been on tours with them in Japan and the United States and other countries, and they have reported very, very large increases in leukemia, especially in children, and reproductive cancers in women, especially breast cancer, and diabetes, very large increases in diabetes. And it's really what I heard from families, American families, who went to visit their Iraqi relatives after the 2003 Iraq War, they came back, and they were in their 30s, and they had diabetes 2 months after they got back from Iraq. And they said their families were in an epidemic of diabetes in Iraq, and they had never had it in their families before. That was the clue for me to start looking for it in our soldiers and to finally understand that all atomic and hydrogen bombs have thousands of pounds of depleted uranium tamping in them, packed around this tiny 20-pound plutonium core. And so I began gathering data all over the world from governments and discovered, indeed, the chronic illnesses that have been increasing so rapidly all over the world, including diabetes. It started in 1945.
Beyond individuals like you who are going out there and doing research and some of the non-governmental organizations you mentioned, is there any, you know, is the concern over DU percolating upwards at all into things like the World Health Organization or elsewhere so that some broader discussion can start taking place about what we do to address this issue?
Well, you have to realize that the World Health Organization gets its money from corporations. So they have a vested interest in continuing to support the corporations and participate in the cover-up. The UN has passed a resolution, I believe it was 1996, that depleted uranium is illegal and it's a weapon of mass destruction. But they haven't done much since then. They did, the United Nations Environmental Program did go into Yugoslavia and do depleted uranium surveys and found residual depleted uranium even today in Yugoslavia. But governments in Europe are in a panic now because of the huge increase in diabetes all over Europe. It's due to Chernobyl and to the depleted uranium used in the Middle East, Central Asia, and Yugoslavia. And I've been to Italy. The whole Italian coastline on the east side of Italy has very large increases in cancer and diabetes. And this is from the drift from Yugoslavia, which is basically a permanent source point of new depleted uranium every day, and it drifts all over Europe. Dr. Chris Busby, who's the low-level radiation expert for the British government, has been extremely outspoken, and as a low-level expert for the British government and the EU, he's really had a very large voice internationally, but not very much support from other establishment medical doctors and scientists.
Well, we're running low on time here, but I do want to ask, this didn't come up during the presidential campaign. Is there any reason to believe that the new administration might be favorable to taking a new look at the use of depleted uranium?
I doubt it. It's being used, it's because the geopolitical reason for using it is to contaminate vast regions where we want to control mineral resources. And this has been a national security policy since the 1970s when Kissinger said that we would have to depopulate regions where we needed minerals in the future, especially in third world countries. So it's basically a global depopulation agenda, which Kissinger later actually formally presented in the Global 2000 report out of the State Department when he was Secretary of State. And Brzezinski, General Haig, Ed Muskie were some of the co-authors of that Global 2000 report. And the goal the stated goal at that time, which they are now achieving, is to depopulate the world by 2 to 4 billion people.
Well, and that's I'm sorry that we're almost out of time, because that's almost a whole nother program that we could be talking about that report.
Yes.
But before we do run out of time, I want to make sure that folks are aware that you're coming to Portland, and you're going to be speaking at what, the Friends Meeting House this Sunday?
Yes, on January 11th from 3 to 5 p.m., and the address is 4312 Southeast Stark Street, S-T-A-R-K. And I'll be bringing books and DVDs and a lot of news for the people of Portland. And I'll also be talking about depleted uranium and 9/11. It was involved in the Pentagon and in the World Trade Center. So I hope that people will come. It'll be people always enjoy my talks, and I love meeting people from other parts of the nation and other parts of the world. Everybody's welcome. And then we'll have questions and answers as well.
And for folks who may not be able to make the event, do you have a website or some other way that they can connect in and plug into your information?
Well, they could just search my name on the internet, L-E-U-R-E-N. I'm all over the internet. I've done a lot of 9/11 and HAARP interviews. If you do a Google video search on my name, there are a lot of videos on the internet that people can watch. And of course, I'm really doing this for the young people, and to as a method of empowering people to do counter recruiting and to save our young people from just basically being turned into uranium meat in these foreign wars.
Well, Lorraine, thank you very much for the work you're doing and for taking the time this morning to talk to us here at KBOO.
Well, Dave, thank you very much. I love KBOO, and Andrew Geller sometimes interviews me, so I've been in your studios, and I think you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. I hope we talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.